Good morning. I invite you to join with me in Psalm 96. If I can turn this on. So your parts are underlined. Sing a new song to the Lord. Sing to the Lord, praise his name.
Each day proclaim the good news that he saves.
Publish his glorious deeds among the nations.
Tell everyone about the amazing things he does.
Let the heavens be glad and the earth rejoice.
Let the sea and everything in it shout his praise.
Let the fields and their crops burst out with joy. Amen. Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Martha Tatarnik, and I am the priest pastor of St. David's Anglican Lutheran Church in Orillia. And I want to share with you a little bit of my musical background, because that's the topic that we're talking about in this morning's workshop. Both of my parents were music teachers, and so I got to see close up how music can be a force of transformation in the lives of all kinds of people. The thing that my parents always said about music's importance, especially in the educational system, is that it provides a non-competitive group activity. It's very different from sports, for example. I saw how it could be an avenue for creative expression, for relationship, and community building. I am myself a French horn player. I'm classically trained, but more than my classical training, I'm passionately interested in modern music of all kinds, rap, metal, folk, pop, all the whole gamut. I enjoy music. I love to hear what's new, what's coming out. I like to notice trends. I like to talk to people about music and see why it's important to them or why it's not important to them. I like to hear new sounds, and I also love to hear classic songwriting. So music is a passion of mine that goes far beyond my classical training as a French horn player. And beyond that, one step further, music for me is the easiest and most natural form of prayer. It is the clearest form of expressing deep religious belief and experience. And it has always opened up for me a wealth of possibility in terms of worship and prayer. So that's my background. That's my bias. As you came in, if you were here a few minutes before 11, you would have heard the song Jubilee playing by Mary Chapin Carpenter. And if I were going to pick one piece of music that is vitally important to me, that speaks something true to my life, that would be one of the songs I would pick. I would have a hard time narrowing it down, but that would be at the top of the list. It was a song that was introduced to me by a colleague when I was pregnant with my first child, and so I started singing it to this unknown baby while I was pregnant. I sang it to her as a baby. I continue to sing it to her now that she's a five-year-old. I have sung it at the bedside of a dying parishioner. I have sung it to a congregation as my time with them came to a close and I was moving on to a new incumbency. I have sung it at a wedding, and I have sung it at funerals. So it connects with me, the words connect with me, and now that it's been a part of my life for so many years, it also has a number of memories that resonate for me when I hear it, and a wide variety of personal experience that I bring to that song. So that's me. I invite you to find somebody, either somebody sitting next to you, or if you know the person next to you really well already, you might want to introduce yourself to somebody else in the room. But just pick one person. You might need to think for a second. What is one piece of music that is of particular importance to you, and why? So just take a few moments, find one person to share your answer with. You might also want. Okay, I'm going to ask you to come back to the group. If you are in the midst of a really fascinating conversation about your piece of music, then I invite you to continue that conversation over lunch. But we're going to continue on with our workshop for this morning. Now, I'm presuming that all of us are here at this vital church planting conference because we take seriously Jesus' commission to go out and make disciples, because we take seriously our baptismal covenant to proclaim by word and example the good news of God in Christ, because we believe that a relationship with God is vitally important for every human life, and because we believe that the body of Christ, the church, the people of God, a community, a relationship is an important part of how that relationship with God needs to take place. So, all of us are concerned with the question of how we reach out to people who are not part of our church right now. And I'm just going to give you a couple of examples of types of people that we might be wondering how we could connect with or how we could reach in new ways. So, Aaron was a young boy in my congregation. He was about 11 years old when I started at St. David's Aurelia, and we were offering a confirmation class. And he told me that he was really excited to take confirmation class. And I said, oh, why is that? So that I can graduate from church. So, that's a particular type of person. As the confirmation class unfolded, I recognized that he was actually a person of very deep faith and was able to express that faith in pretty remarkable ways for a young boy. But he saw absolutely no connection between his life and his faith and the church. No connection. So that would be a particular kind of person that we might wonder how we could connect with. There is a faith life happening there, but there is not a connection with church. Here's another type of person that we might wonder about, not Leonard Cohen. I have a friend whose name is Faith, and she told me, I'm not sure I believe in God, but I know I believe in Leonard Cohen. She didn't grow up in the church at all. She has no church experience. She has not articulated a sense of faith, but there's clearly something stirring there. There's clearly some possibility of making a connection. Now, you will not be surprised to learn that I think that music might provide one of those possibilities for connection. And the primary reason why I believe that that connection can happen is because Music provides us with a vast arena of common ground between the people in church and the people not in church. So I hope that we can explore some of that common ground together. And the first thing that I want to do is show you a little clip from a movie, Walk the Line. This is the, I guess it's called a biopic? Is that what they're called? A biopic of Johnny Cash. It's a wonderful movie. And the scene that I'm going to show you is the scene where he is auditioning for a recording contract. And I want you to just pay attention to the depths of religious expression that are coming out in what's happening here. Okay, so there's a lot of dimensions going on in that particular clip. But let's start to explore some of that common ground that we find between how music is used in faith and worship and what music means to people in the secular world who maybe have no connection with church or faith. We use music in worship and in our faith life to express truth in a different or deeper way. For a lot of people, when you say something in words, it simply doesn't or can't mean as much as if you say it through music. And in the secular world, as we heard in that clip, music does the exact same thing. It's meant to express truth in a different or deeper way. So we see in this clip, we see the studio executive saying to Johnny Cash, if you had a chance to sing one song that would express who you are, that would express what you think of this life, what would it be? We believe in our churches, and we believe outside of our churches, that music has the power to do that. It has the power to express the deepest truths of identity, of meaning, of our life, and of how our life connects with the world around us. In faith and worship, music is used as a communal act. It is about participation. It is important that people lift their voices together in song. In the secular world, music has always traditionally held that communal property, and that has been lost to a significant extent in the secular world. So there are still bands, there are still jam bands, community orchestras, community choirs. But let's think for a moment about Beck. How many people know the musician Beck? A few of you. Does anybody know how he released his latest collection of songs? As sheet music. That's right. And I was listening to an interview with Beck, and he talked about the fact that he wasn't really doing this as a novelty. He was doing this as a way of sort of getting back to the communal nature of music. That a century ago, probably even less than a century ago, the primary way that music was consumed was through sheet music. So a hit would be released on sheet music and would sell millions of copies. Millions of people would buy the sheet music and then would gather around pianos or guitars or what have you and would consume the music together. That's a very different experience of music than are the primary way that music is now consumed, which is individually through a download on your computer. You don't even have to go into a store and interact with anybody in order to buy music nowadays. However, that communal aspect of music has always been very important both inside and outside of our churches. Music in faith and in worship gives people an emotional and personal connection with their faith. The number one complaint that I hear from people about worship is that they don't like the music, or we're not doing enough of the old music, or they don't know the music, or music is a lightning rod for people's unhappiness in churches, because music is also a lightning rod for people to personally connect with their experience of faith. In the secular world, very similar. Music allows us to connect our personal lives, our experiences, our memories onto songs. I'm sure that we have all had that experience of a song coming on the radio or the supermarket or whatever that you haven't heard for a while, and like that, it just takes you back. It takes you back to where you were and how you felt when that song was important to you. Similarly, it can be a lightning rod for personal connection. Music in our faith and worship is used as a way of communicating a message. And like that aspect of truth-telling, it allows us to communicate the messages of what we believe and what our faith is about in a perhaps more memorable or more visceral way than simply talk, talk, talk. And in the secular world, music is also an incredibly powerful vehicle for messages. So music can, we can see the messages of punk music, of folk protest music, of grunge music, but even music that seemingly has no message, like perhaps Britney Spears or some of those pop groups, they're also communicating a message. They're also communicating a message about where that culture is, what that culture is feeling, experiencing, wanting. You can see the patterns of musical consumption and what is popular relating to what is going on in the society around it. In our worship and in our faith life, music provides a physical means of prayer. So rather than just engaging our minds or even just engaging our voices, music allows our whole body to enter into worship. Our stomach, our lungs, our voices, our entire being can get invested into the act of praying and worshiping through music. And of course, in our secular world, music also has that very physical element. It's something that we associate with dancing, with parties, with fun, with good times, with people feeling good. Now that's just the beginning of sort of mining that common ground. Does anybody want to add to that? Any other places of common ground that you would note?
Not intergenerational, and we've run into problems with
Right, okay. Okay, so it can be very much related to particular generations. Okay, yes. Yes.
My son is a professional musician, and one of the drummers who was like completely out of church said to me, "You don't want to play. I feel like the music is coming from somewhere else. Like it's not me."
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Very much so. Transcendence, that's a great word. Anybody else? Yes. Yeah.
That certain types of music develop a community of their own. I mean, I was at a gathering where my son was playing, and there was about four different genres of music that were being offered that night. And you could literally look around the room and just see who was the fan of the particular band according to the music. By the way they dress, by the way they dance, by the way they dress.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's very true, isn't it? I had some friends who were parrot heads, who followed, the name's not coming to me, Jimmy Buffett. And they had this whole like global community of people that they were regularly in touch with who were also parrot heads and fans of Jimmy Buffett. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes, yes. And that universal language of music, it does hold up. It holds up because you can hear something that is in not in your language. You can sing something that is not in your language, and yet a message is still communicated. Did you have your hand up? No. Is there somebody else who had their hand up? Yes. Yeah. Yes, a few of my friends, when we started having children, we noted to each other that we expected that we would sort of forge a new way where there wouldn't be that generational divide in music. That the divide that we felt with our parents. We couldn't see how that was gonna hold true because new music continues to be so important to me and my friends. So yeah, I think it's something to question. Yes, Brian. Yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah.
I think it's
Oh, okay. Yes, yes, that's a good point. Sorry, what was that? Oh, now see, we're not going to open up that debate. That's a whole other workshop. But I would suggest that that what we're hearing about these various experiences, about some openness between generations and some very close-mindedness between generations, is that it isn't a given, and that we actually can learn to listen and experience the offering of music that other people have to give. So let's... does anybody else want to add to our list of common ground here? Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes, educational, that's a great word as well. Yes, Sesame Street. Oh, I know, and it was only like much later, because I grew up in a family where it was only classical music that was ever played. And so I would hear these like folk songs and pop songs and so on and realize that they'd used all that in Sesame Street. Like, that's how I knew that music, was because they'd adapted it for Sesame Street. It's very clever. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yes, opens the spirit. That's another good phrase. Okay. So part of the reason why I was asked to lead this workshop today is because we have been experimenting with using music in some new ways in the community where I am. And so I'm going to share with you a little bit of our experience at St. David's. Hopefully you'll hear our experience, not as a template that you need to take and drop into your community, and not as me saying, well, this is what we did, and you thinking, well, how is that applicable to us? Hopefully you can hear in our experience bits and pieces of some creative ideas and some ideas that have worked for us that that you can then adapt into your own context, or that maybe you are already adapting into your own context. So a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, St. David's was in a place of discernment. And through prayerful and parish-wide discernment, it began to become clear that we were going to start a new service and that music was going to be a big part of that new service. So we started Fam Jam. Fam Jam is a Saturday worship service that we offer every week at St. David's. We have the music provided by a jam band. And so we hold an open jam session every Saturday from 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock, followed by worship at 5 o'clock, led by the jam band. The jam band is open to anybody, and so it is musicians of all ages and all levels playing together, learning from one another, and creating and making music together. And then the jamming provides the feel for the worship. So a very interactive, participatory, flexible worship service that has shared leadership. And we started this in the fall of 2011. So Fam Jam is really still an infant. We've been doing it for just over a year at this point. But already there have been a lot of developments, and a lot of those developments have happened around music. So very quickly into the birth of Fam Jam, I had a young woman approach me, and she had not previously been connected with the church. She approached me and said that she wanted to start providing something for the younger children. So the Jam Band provides really something for people, say, 12 to whatever age. But it's a little beyond young children being able to participate. So she has a background in music, and she was also a teacher by training. And she decided that during that hour when the Jam Band was playing, she was going to work with the children on simple rhythms and percussion and making percussion instruments, that kind of thing, so that they could then come into the worship at 5 o'clock and also participate in the music that we were doing and bring their contribution as well. She had a small business in town, and so she wasn't able to be there every week, but I thought that her idea was awesome. And so I recruited a team of people who could offer this children's ministry together. So this year, Lindsay ended up moving to Split Lake, Manitoba to take a teaching job there. But I was able to recruit another former music teacher as one of our leaders. We have two teenage girls who do dance with the children, and then we have another young woman who does art and crafts with the kids. So that was an important development, so that the children had an age-appropriate way of also engaging in what they would then offer to the worship. When we started up Fam Jam, I gathered together a group of musicians who I imagined would be key leaders in the community, and we brainstormed, you know, music that we'd like to start with in our worship. But that starting list has widely, widely expanded as people have joined the Jam Band and then brought their own music for us to play in the band and then in the worship. So we kind of started with some good folky 60s stuff and some praise music and that kind of thing. And then we have some teenagers who like to bring in stuff that they hear on the radio, and some of it is Christian rock, and a lot of it is stuff that they hear on the radio, and they hear that spiritual dimension in the music, and they think this would work at Fam Jam. And so they bring it in, we find the chords, and we learn that music together. Another development is that we've started to make chant part of the worship as well. So we've found a number of simple chants that the Jam Band can easily lead, and we use that chanting as the way of entering into the space that we need for engaging with the word. So this is a little piece that typically our lay minister will say before we start the chant, and then the reading for the day follows right after the chant. So music is prayer. Physically singing opens and relaxes the body. Traditionally and across cultures, music is used in prayer and praise. Spiritually, the act of chanting has been experienced as a way of opening ourselves to God's presence in our midst and voice in our lives. As we chant together tonight, we prepare ourselves to hear God's holy word, to be open to where and how God is leading us and acting in us. Recently, in Fam Jam, we've had a few other developments. When we first started out, the band was really just learning how to play together, learning some basic repertoire, taking the music that people brought in and trying to incorporate that into worship. Well, now that we're a year and a bit in, and we've been playing together for a while, we have a new opportunity that's emerging, and I'm really excited about how this works in our worshiping community, because we now have a wide enough variety of repertoire that before we begin our 5 o'clock worship, I can engage the congregation and the band in a brief discussion about the Christian season that we're in, the themes that are going to come up in our reflection and in our scripture reading for that evening. And then we decide together what music we're going to use for the worship. So about 4:45, we have this conversation. We decide what music we're going to use in the worship. And it's selected through that process of theological reflection, of the community together listening to what is happening and what's happening in our worship, and then figuring out what music is going to work in that evening's worship. So it's a pretty cool development that we're now able to do that we couldn't have done a year ago when we were just starting out. But I'm finding that people really get excited about having that hands-on experience of trying to make those connections between worship and the music. I've also challenged people in our community, particularly some of our teenagers, to give me songs that they like, and I'll try to work them into a sermon or a reflection. So it kind of gives them a chance to share something that they like, and then it gives me a chance to have to think creatively about how my reflection for that evening is going to connect with a particular song. So I was proud of myself at the end of November on Christ the King. I managed to work in The Wicked End by Avenged Sevenfold, which, you know, you should check out that piece of music because it's never been played at St. David's in worship before, and it surprised a few people, but it actually worked perfectly for the reflection of the day. So that's something that's fun for the community, and I've also invited members of the jam band who write music to share a piece of music that again can be worked into a reflection in the sermon. So there's this blurring of the traditional lines of what happens in worship, and the music actually becomes part of how we open up the word to one another. Now, I think that we can probably all agree that music can express the deepest truths of who we are, of what we understand life to be about, the deepest truths of our relationship with God and our life of faith. But can music actually be part of forming disciples? I can tell you that I have seen in our community, I have seen how music can be a means of people connecting their personal experience with the teachings of the faith in new ways. And maybe more than that, I can tell you that what I see happening through Fam Jam is a real development of theological reflection. Because we sometimes use secular music in our worship, it invites people to see the connections between their faith and what we proclaim in church, and then what they hear and see and experience in the secular world around them. And then to bring that reflection into our worship, and it becomes this ongoing cycle of theological reflection, of reflecting together and then reflecting out in the world and bringing the world in and taking the world out. What I see happening through music in Fam Jam is very much about offering. And you know, going back to Peter's comment about how segregated generations can be around music, what I see happening in Fam Jam is that people of all different ages have to be open to both giving and receiving. That the assumption is that everybody has something to offer in this worship that we do together, from very young children all the way to, you know, people who are well into the senior years of their lives. There has to be that understanding of offering, though, for that to take place. There has to be a sense of respect and gratitude when one of our teenagers brings a couple of his friends and they play some punk music at Fam Jam. And then there has to be some respect and gratitude from our teenagers when somebody brings a piece by Big and Rich, which is, you know, a country style of music. And then there has to be respect and gratitude from the people who attend Fam Jam who maybe don't particularly like rock music, but they like that the people, that young people in their community are getting engaged with the worship. And they like that people who haven't connected with church prior to Fam Jam are connecting with church. There's very much that basis of offering in which everybody has the opportunity to bring their gifts, to bring their insights, to bring their questions, their experiences, their passions, to bring their whole self to the worship that we're doing together, and having that received and welcomed. Aaron, who was the boy who wanted to take confirmation class so that he could graduate from church, he is one of our key leaders in Fam Jam, and he's now taken on the position of director of music for our youth band this coming year. He loves to bring his own compositions into Fam Jam, and he regularly finds new and very meaningful music for the band to try. I invited him to be part of our Holy Week brainstorming session a couple of weeks ago, and you know, he's a very typical, in some ways, very typical 15-year-old boy. He sat through this brainstorming session just looking like he was bored out of his tree and couldn't, like, understand why he was there. And I, you know, kept thinking, like, oh, shoot. Like, I guess it was a mistake to ask him to be part of this. And then, you know, the next week he came back and he had, like, the perfect piece of music to use on Palm Sunday of Holy Week, and it was all based on what he had heard from people reflecting together in this brainstorming. So he's a fully engaged member of the community, which is pretty cool. We have George at Fam Jam, who is a local musician who wandered into Fam Jam one day last year, and he was baptized in November, and he's now a lay minister in that community. We have Alex, who is an extremely troubled teen, and when he can get to Fam Jam, he sings with the band. He really likes to have his own microphone. He doesn't like to share his microphone. And Before Christmas, he asked me if he could share a piece of poetry that he had written about his mother dying, and he wanted to read that to the community in Fam Jam. And he was also baptized last November. So, by God's grace, we hope at St. David's that these stories are just the beginning of what's going to unfold. But certainly it has been our experience that common ground that we identify can be very rich soil for the work of forming disciples. So, let's open it up to you. How has music been meaningful in your spiritual journey or in the life of your church? Whoa. I don't know what that was. No? Sure. Yeah.
Words and how, in fact, you know, you understand now why the monks always chanted a psalm every day.
Yeah.
Absolutely brought a new dimension to the psalm.
Well, and it was you who said earlier that there is something very different between singing and listening. Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Interesting. Yes. Yeah.
And much of what we do in church has to be embodied, you know, speaking, eating, drinking, touching. So that's been, you know, my experience of making music has really informed my understanding of faith, because I think for Christians, it's not disembodied, it's embodied.
Yes. Yes, extremely, we have extremely sensual worship. It's very much about, like you said, embodiment, about bringing all of our senses to that act of worship and faith. Yeah, I like that.
Can I ask that question?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a range, you know. Some weeks we have the dream team, and some weeks not quite so much. Now, we have a really awesome director of music who holds things together on the keyboard, and you know, you can have a lot of other potentially problematic things happening over top, but with a really strong leader, it works. And And a lot of the time, like, it really works, you know, like, there are moments of just pure beauty where you can sort of hear everybody, like, collectively inhale at the end. And some weeks, it's not quite so beautiful, but still spirited.
over the period of time, have you seen an improvement?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes, like, what I hear a lot with the choir is that I think musical teachers have a lot to answer for, because I come across people in the choir that say, oh, you know, my music teacher told me I couldn't sing or I didn't have any musical ability.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's just a question of practice. Some people have to work harder at it than others, but everybody can actually.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Alex, who I mentioned before, like, he's not a great singer, you know? But as the principle of Fam Jam sort of overrides the fact that he's not an awesome singer, and he gets his own microphone, and he, like, him contributing is a huge sign of what it's supposed to be about. And then there's enough stronger musicianship that sort of carries that along. So, yes. It depends. It depends on who's bringing it in. Like, occasionally, for example, if I'm trying to preach or reflect using a song that somebody's given me, like, we did not perform The Wicked End at Fam Jam. I used a recording. And sometimes if somebody's bringing a piece of music in, they'll play it once for the band to hear before the band then tries, especially if you're just working from chords. But some, like Aaron, he's a strong enough singer and guitar player that he can play it through and people can just sort of join in as they get the hang of it. So it depends. Yes. Okay. How so?
Our version of your Fam Jam is put on 1 week a month in place of the regular 10:30 service.
Okay.
With music picked by a priest who knows nothing about music. It's just it's a hymn that they happen to remember or they heard years ago, and they decide this is what fits.
Yeah.
And the only reason that as they say, the priest keeps saying, well, the new people coming into the church require this new music because they don't like the old. And yet, what I see is the main reason most of them are there is because they have their children involved in the service.
Hmm. Yeah, well, and the thing that I have found in my own process is that I've had to do a lot of letting go, you know? Like, I remember shortly after we had started getting the first, you know, major piece of feedback on how Fam Jam was developing, and it was like this long email from a couple of people about all the things that weren't working. And my first reaction was to cry. But everything that was in that email was actually really helpful. And so after I felt like crying, I had to sort of let go and surrender and then listen and go from there. And there were a lot of really positive developments that came out of that first major chunk of feedback. Every piece of feedback that we've gotten has been another piece of what Fam Jam has become. So letting go is pretty important. Brian?
I'm correct in understanding that you started the second service to do that
That's correct. So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's what this whole conference is about, right, is church planting. The idea of starting a second service is essentially about planting a new church without having to eat up a whole bunch of resources to do so. And it is a leap of faith to scavenge from yourself, but you do so in the trust that that seeds watered and cared for will start to grow. Yeah. Yeah, at Fam Jam we have kind of three categories of people. We have people who can't get enough of worship, and so they love coming to Fam Jam and they love coming to 10 o'clock. I even have a few people who love to come to 8 o'clock as well, so they worship as much as I do on the weekends. And that's cool, because each service is different. And then we have people who have switched, so who no longer attend Sunday mornings and just attend Fam Jam, and then we have people who are new exclusively because of Fam Jam. Yes?
I think part of it ties in with what a fresh expression is about and the whole band.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think, in fact, had you started it on a Saturday, maybe in another building, that might have made some sense of difference as well. Because when something's in your own building, for some people, it's hard to separate it from
right.
what you're already doing.
Right.
Well, then, it's not a start, it's a replace that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yes. Yeah, well, and this is our third service as well. So it was a commitment that I had to talk over with my family, and it involved a lot of personal discernment as well. Yes. Aaron, yeah.
So very much that experience, right? And I just remember as a young person, music things were deeply personal and very private in a lot of ways, so I would mull it over and maybe journal about it. And an invitation to share that would have been very meaningful to me. And anyways, I don't know what it's speaking to you, so we don't really have very many gifts to be bloody musicians.
Yeah.
Week by week, one at a time. To start, I don't know, I just think it's a really natural privilege from the
Yeah. Cool. Did somebody else have their... Yes, Heather. Oh, well, the PowerPoint's connected to Wi-Fi, and so you can, you know, just Google the lyrics and then cut and paste into the PowerPoint. But all of those technical considerations took a lot of, there were a lot of glitches to iron out, but actually, just... a funny story. We had Bishop George Elliott come to worship with us last June, and we asked him to come to Fam Jam rather than Sunday mornings. And so one of our kids had brought in a piece of music, and I had listened to it, like I'd heard it on the radio. It was Some Nights by Fun. And so I had gotten the music, and we played through it, and somebody cut and pasted the lyrics and put them on. Well, there was the F word in the lyrics, and nobody had caught that. Until it went up on the overhead. So there was some quick editing. None of the musicians had, they weren't going to sing that word in church, but we hadn't quite edited that out of the overhead. So there's some moments. Yes? I don't know. I mean, we get those one licenses and stuff, but I don't know. Maybe we might be breaking copyright.
We didn't print a sheet.
No. We don't put any music up on the screen. We just put lyrics. Yeah. Okay. That's good to know. Okay. Yeah, we haven't thought through every single thing. So in your experience, has music been a form of, have you seen music as a form of evangelism? What other experiences do you want to bring to the group of how music provides this connection in forming disciples? Yes, Susan.
Well, I think that for my grandsons, their first experience of sort of being aware of God's presence is when they go to VBS and come home and they can actually sing a song about God that they can actually articulate.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. My little boy, one of his very first words was hallelujah. And we would hear him in his bed at night. Hallelujah. You know, just over and over and over again. That was all that he had picked up, was just that repetition. But he just thought that was the best thing ever. Yes, yes.
This summer I went to church. I'm not a drummer by any experience at all, but they had a drum service in the start. And I wouldn't be something I would speak up on my own, but I was kind of really enjoyed it and felt like how accessible that was, and I'm kind of sort of how non-threatening it is as a way to start a community and work together.
Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah, David.
I used to have a parish musical, and I had a young woman in her early 20s who came to a concert, and then
That's amazing.
And new language.
Yeah.
New.
Yeah. Anybody else? Any other questions? Comments? Experiences? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, well, if there are no more questions or comments, it is lunchtime. Thank you so much for being so attentive.